We can say a lot of terrible things about COVID-19, but one of the things that we learned was that if we actually get together and we need to know some information about, this was more about how does this impact a city and how your work movement patterns to work and the different restrictions that would apply on from the governments and so on. And you just saw different data sources, or so far unknown data sources, to come together, because this was very important to get over this crisis. And so I call these data collaboratives, and this is what we've been needing the whole time. So we just need something that's extremely important to get people to go forward and actually deliver this type of information.
Hi there, Smart Community friends. In this episode of the Smart Community Podcast, I have a really fantastic conversation with Peter Bjorn Larsen, the founder of Smart City Insights, which is a smart city advisory consultancy based in Copenhagen in Denmark. Now, you may remember Peter from way back in episode 190, and we recorded this episode right at the start of the COVID-19 pandemic. Now, in this episode, we discuss some of the projects that Peter has been working on, from Copenhagen to Canada to Scotland. Peter also tells us why it's so important to have both public and private sectors working together on smart community projects, and how we can create projects with multiple benefits or different benefits for different stakeholders. Peter and I then discuss the concept of data collaboratives and how they're different to data marketplaces, plus why we should be using data to solve normal problems. We explore the problem of who will pay for it when trying to work collaboratively and breaking down silos, and Peter tells us about the real reason we need walkable cities. We finish our chat discussing why Peter tries to never use the word data when talking to people about smart city projects, and how useful digital twins will be in the future for helping citizens visualize projects. Now, at the end of the chat, we also mentioned being in Barcelona. I will be heading to the Barcelona Smart City Expo in November. So I'm heading off on the 12th of November, and I'll be in Barcelona from the 15th until the 18th of November. So if you're in Barcelona and you're at the expo or you're hanging around, please let me know. I would love to catch up. Just send me a message on LinkedIn. I think Peter will also be there, so I'm looking forward to catching up with him then as well. Now, as always, we hope you enjoy listening to this episode as much as we enjoyed making it.
Welcome to the smart community, smart regions, smart towns, and smart cities. It's where we live, work, and play. With smart communities, the future starts today. Big data, smart mobility, emerging trends galore. The Smart Community Podcast is what you're looking for.
Hello, Peter. How are you today?
I'm great, Zoe. How are you?
I'm really good. It's great to hear. I'm just really excited that we're having this conversation. I haven't looked it up, but last time you were on the pod was definitely during COVID. We were talking the different responses in different countries and borders and all that type of stuff as well. And now it's 2022 and we're in a different time. Still stuff happening, of course. Things are going on. But anyway, let's just jump in and tell us about your background and what you're passionate about.
Yeah. And thanks for having me on the podcast again. So it's definitely, thank God, different times just now, but still a lot of things to do. But yeah, I have my company, Smart City Insights, which I just had for the past 5 years. But work with the smart city concept for, I think, now 13 years, and with city development for over 20 years now. So the passion is about cities in general, always been. When I was a kid, I was looking in the atlas and on the globus to see where things were and stuff like this. So I guess I'm just extremely passionate about these things. So, yeah, and actually, of course, with the smart cities, actually trying to, or smart communities as well, trying to finally get this to work and get implemented, which is one of my big passions.
Yeah, I love that. Now tell everyone where you are in the world as well.
Yeah, I'm based out of Copenhagen in Denmark, working from a place called Blockshop. I don't know if I mentioned that in the last podcast, but it is like...
And I visited you there when I was on my Churchill Fellowship.
Yeah. So this is where we
fleeting bring visit.
Yeah, exactly. So that's where we bring to bed together a lot of these different stakeholders that work with city development, anything from architects, construction companies, and smart city consultants like myself and the cities themselves. So interesting place to be.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. Okay, I'm really keen to, I guess, talk about what's happened since we last spoke, what you've been working on, because I know there's lots of things happening, which is really exciting. But we'll go broad first and we'll go to what is a smart community to you?
Yeah, so basically, as I think, as we spoke about before we actually started, that's basically two things. So I think, first of all, the smart cities, as I see as a concept, we need to use. And for me, it was just about, you know, how do we use data and technology in order to reach the visions, the targets that we have in cities and regions, but even in private sector companies as well, the railways and so on. Yeah, so that's one thing. I think the other thing is the smart communities as well, because you can't do this alone. And I think this is something we learned for the past 13 years. We're still struggling a little bit, but you really need to get the stakeholders together. You need to work with the cities. You need to work with the citizens. You need to work with the companies to try and understand how can we actually make this happen together, to understand each other, which is sometimes, like we do now, just a basic conversation to have. But for me, it's really to have an understanding of the challenges, the problems that there might be in a city or even in companies, hospitals and so on, and then understand how can we actually help each other and what impact does that have, and do we like it or not? If we start to talk about data, there's a lot of issues. So what do we think about that as citizens as well? So for me, of course, that's the smart city concept, which is a bit hard about technology and data, but you know, you used it for the softer things. And then the community is really how you make it happen. You know, you need to have a conversation amongst the different stakeholders to actually implement the concept.
Mm, I like the idea that, you know, the community is how you make it happen.
Yeah.
And as we know, you know, we've got our community as in like our citizens, that type of thing. But as you were talking there, it's something that I've been thinking about and processing as well. It's not just... So you can, the concept of smart communities or the smart city concepts, you know, if we take it back to people, is actually applicable to businesses, like a hospital in itself or whatever has its own community. And a lot of these concepts using tech and data are just like the next step for them as well. It doesn't just have to be about local government or, you know, state government or whatever. Obviously, they're key players, but we're seeing more and more. Sounds like you'd be the same, getting more and more inquiries from a business, even small business. How do I bring in this concept, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll give an example later on about how we see why it's so important to have both the businesses and the private and the public sector working together on this concept. But I can come back to that.
Okay. Well, we could go there now. Tell us about that example of getting private sector and public sector all together.
Yeah, of course. So basically, since the City Data Exchange 10 years ago, was what I was working at in Copenhagen to get information about how Copenhagen could become a neutral. So that was the concept, to get information both from the public and private side, which could also be used by the public and private. And we've been continuing to working on that thought that, you know, everybody really wants the same. So what we did, as you say, it's not a project yet, still it's an application that's out, but we did a pre-project. So this is what I can tell you about. And so basically we went to talk to developers and asked them what's really important for you when you have to develop a new building or a new area. And they start to say, well, it's important to know about biodiversity. What does people actually want? It's important to know about the financials and different kind of things. We talk to architects, we talk to shopping centers, cultural attractions, and these different kind of things. And what we figured out, which we knew a little bit already, was that they're all asking for similar information. And this is all, you know, the private sector. Then we talked to the city of Copenhagen and we talked to other municipalities. So city Copenhagen being the largest one, but we also talked to smaller municipalities to try and figure out, what do you want to know? What is important for you to measure? So in the planning stages, they wanted to know a lot of different things. What is the impact of the different initiatives that we have? So basically, we put that all together into a matrix and say, you all want to know the same, a kind of similar thing. So what we're trying to create here is a baseline of information for city development, but based on private sector data and public sector data. And right now, we have different products off the shelf in terms of private sector data, but it doesn't really fit the purpose. So we have quite a few private sector data sources, also public sector. So we have them in an innovation project if you want to try and create this baseline. So we change their data so it fits the purpose in terms of city development. So that's quite interesting, a project we have now. And we know it's the same and we want to put them in the same room to say, you all want the same, let's try and actually create it finally. I could say maybe a quick thought on top of that. So we also have the local high school. We have the schools. They're interested in this as well to get the pupils both to work with the information in the local area, but also actually to be out interviewing other people on the street to get to know the area better as well. So the community part is really important in this as well. So yeah, so that's what we are moving towards to try and actually finally get this to happen, but in a different way than we did 10 years ago.
Well, we've learned a lot since then, right? And like some of the barriers and challenges, some are still there, obviously. Some are not, because we've moved through them or we've learned and we've developed things differently. But then there's new challenges and barriers as well that you continually overcome, or that you have to face and hopefully overcome. Yeah. Just, I guess, you know, thinking about when we're talking about, you know, those different players, you know, we often think that they all have really different demands of data or, I guess, needs and that type of thing, which I think is, you know, true in some cases, but like you discovered, there's that common thread too. And also that same data can be used in different ways by different organizations as well, but at the core of it, the data is the same. And then you can, you know, take your bits out of it or move it in a way, manipulate it in a way then serves your purpose, right?
I mean, one of the projects I had where we thought about a lot more about the private sector as well, was it started in the public sector. So it's the city of Hamilton in Canada. So we had 22 workshops or something in different departments, but basically they were covering transport, retail, social services, tourism, and all of these kind of things. And they work very differently. It's very different topics that we are discussing. And when they talked about the information they wanted in order to create better services for the citizens or saving time with the different services they had and the work they did, it was similar information. And it's the same thing you have to buy when it comes to technology, for example. And then we interviewed the fire department, the tourism agencies, the shops and these kind of things. And they said the same thing. And so that's how everything, you know, started. So if you make an investment in data, if you are a developer, and you say, I want to know this about the area, why don't you give that back to the community? So you can actually get the metro station some information about how to improve what they have there. It could be back to the city to understand more about the local area. And it all, you know, it benefits everyone to do this. But if you don't have a system for it, you just go in silos. And I'm sorry to say that name because we keep saying that. but yeah. And I think one way we learned about this as well, how it's possible, we can say a lot of terrible things about COVID-19, but one of the things that we learned was that if we actually get together and we need to know some information about, this was more about how does this impact a city and how your work movement patterns to work and the different restrictions that would apply on from the governments and so on. And you just saw different data sources, or so far unknown data sources, to come together because this was very important to get over this crisis. And so I call these data collaboratives, and this is what we've been needing the whole time. So we just need something that's extremely important to get people to go forward and actually deliver this type of information. So we are still trying actually to use something positive out of COVID to show them that the cases, you know. If we can get all of this information, we can react quicker, we can make better decisions. So this is what we tried with the Smart City concept for 13 years. And sometimes you need a crisis to show the impact of it.
Yeah. And I think bring it back to, if we all agree that this is really important, then we can make things happen. it's just, you know, it takes a long time, or something really big and, you know, impactful globally or for a country, or, you know, we know we can think of kind of these events that happen, even natural disasters and things like that. We come together to do this. And so with the smart community concept, it's thinking about, okay, can we all agree that this is really important? So then what are the steps that we need to make to happen? And I think one of the biggest things, and you know, it starts by telling the story, showing the examples of showing the benefits, measuring the benefits to start with, so then we can tell people about it. And then awareness, because, you know, awareness leads to focus, which leads to action. And I think we're getting there. I mean, being in the game as long as you have, you will see the space change and shift, and hopefully one day it just drops, right? Like, oh, yes, this is what we have to do.
It's tiny, tiny steps we're taking, but we're going in the right direction for sure. I mean, we had a meeting with the different stakeholders in this project I talked about. And so we had the high school, we have the city, and we had the data sources, and we had the different companies. And there was a lot of these, that makes sense. I said, okay, so why do you want that? And they said, okay. And even the data sources, they said, okay, if we combine this, we can actually answer the challenge that they have with the type of information. So it was, and I was just bringing people together to talk openly about these things. And we all want to try the same. And they all agreed we need this. If we could just get basic information that we could tap into every time we did a project. And that was the whole, that was the baseline of everything that we talked about. And so it wasn't scary. It wasn't dangerous to talk about. So that was a common goal that we talked about, a bit like we said with COVID, and it just opened up the conversation in such a positive way. How can it be used in the school? How can it be used in education? And they opened up and said, this would be fantastic, you know, a new way to look at things. So, yeah. So I think we're getting a lot closer to where we want to be. We might have to call it something different. So smart communities is a good start. Smart cities, I think, was a barrier. So, yeah.
It's interesting because we were talking before about the language and how, you know, call it whatever you want, but it is, language is important because it can form that barrier. And in different contexts, like, you know, I know in South Korea, you use the term smart cities, and even yourselves, it's not this kind of, I don't know, it means something different, or it's not seen as a barrier, right? Whereas, you know, in other places, it's like, oh no, I can't even engage with that. So, but we just need to have that kind of common understanding of what we're trying to do behind the scenes, not behind the scenes, actually very transparently in front of the scenes. And I think once we do, you know, we're working towards that, obviously, and the whole space is maturing. I guess I'm keen to understand the projects that you've been doing, and we can talk about a few more of those as well. But what are some of those biggest challenges you've seen over the time that you worked on this? And I guess if we have overcome some of those as well, taking us on that journey.
Yeah. I mean, if we just go 13 years back, this is going to take many, many hours, but no, if you go 13 years back, it was all about technology. You know, it was the big companies. I also worked for Hitachi, as you know, at one point. But when we talk 13 years ago, it was the big companies coming out and saying, now we have technology and you need to use it for better cities. So it was very technology driven. And that was definitely, it was good because it started an awareness of what's possible, but it was the wrong way to approach it. As you say, you need the community and not need to solve societal challenges and complex challenges in cities and not talk about technology, actually. But I think we changed, and we're having more and more players within the field coming together, which has been a change. We know how to combine, you know, anything from architects to the tech companies. How can they work together? How is that important? But I really think, and the conversation to go across the silos in cities, so different departments actually talking together and saying, okay, this makes sense. So we have, I know it's a bit of a cliche, but the intelligent lamppost where you can put up different types of sensors and you can control traffic, you can control lights, you can measure air quality, you can do all kinds of things with that. There's a safety aspect, connected cars, you know, a lot of these things you can use it for. And you know, you need to go across departments. And I think we actually become very good at that, or the cities have become very good at that. The issue that remains is the budgets, because you can talk a lot across different departments, but the budgets are still stuck in each department in the city or the government even. So the big issue we have is that we understand there is horizontal going across different domains and different areas of a city, but who should pay for it? So if you want to work efficiently with smart communities and smart cities, you always have to think about one investment, multiple purposes. Because if it's just one investment and one purpose, then you're not working intelligently with it. And the problem is that if you make an investment in mobility or in energy or in social services, you just use it for that. And there's many examples of why we can't scale it because of that. So you need to make a new budget, which is, you can call it digital, or you can call it other things. So where you make what I call horizontal investments in technology or data, which I talked about in the other project, it can be used for so many things. But as long as we have, we own, look, I paid for it, it's mine. I'm not going to share it. Then it's going to take a long, long time to, before we can actually implement these things. So I think that is the biggest barrier. I think we're getting much, much closer. We are seeing the cities, like the big cities like London and New York and Austin and Texas, I know as well, and Amsterdam and these things where they have the CTOs and CDOs and these things. And that has really helped. And I think then you go, it's easy to create these projects where you get multiple benefits. I think where we don't have an organization around it, that's where we see the big challenges still. In Copenhagen is an example. We're doing well, but we're not using technology and data efficiently enough because that might not be a big need. But you can do things better.
I think that's a really key point, and some one again, like, you know, shows us maturing in the space as well. It's not just, okay, we've implemented this technology. I really like what you said there around that investment having multiple purposes, because it's only one-to-one ratio, then you're not doing it intelligently, because you can't, you're not getting that scale benefits that smart communities promises.
Yeah.
And it promises it because it is real, but you need to actually make the right choices to be able to make it real. At the end of the day, there's still people, like people have to be involved in this. And it won't just happen by magic. No. But the horizontal, I think it's really important. Keep going.
Yeah, no, I think it's really, because I always work on, there's two different things. So one is, how do cities actually ask for solutions? And you know the testing, I remember a project in the European Commission, we call it Death by Pilot. So you pilot something and nothing happens. We talked about this for 13 years or even more. But it's like, what is the investment we need to do? So you see investments in technology, sometimes you don't know what to use it for. You only use it for one purpose, which is not very intelligent. I always call it fashionistas. So just follow the trend, buy the technology. Now we have intelligent streetlights and we have smart this and smart that, but they don't use it very intelligently. It's very expensive. And then the politician saying this was a very bad idea, very expensive, and we are not, what are we getting out of it? The other thing is more conservative, where we say, okay, we would like to test different sensors and cameras and solutions, but we don't know why we're testing, because everyone needs a test lab, a test bed. But you really need to understand, if we have to make this investment, so somebody comes up and say, well, we need to measure different things. How do we then make the infrastructure for that? And who else could benefit from this? And this is what I mean about the organization. So before you test something, understand, what do I actually need? Why do I need to test this? And I still think that's another challenge that we see. And it requires a lot of work to do that. It require upfront investment in something that's not very sexy, is to just speak to each other across the departments and show, here's a real demand which requires this data or this technology. So actually, if we get this, you have one investment and then you have 10, 15 different projects. So that's the city side. On the company side, they deliver IoT platforms and different type of solutions, which can be used for multiple purposes. So I think, and they are not talking about those multiple purposes for obvious reasons. So there's something about putting pressure on the solution providers to say, if you want to sell me something, you know, you need to tell me what can I use it for. You need to give me at least 10 use cases or 5 use cases across different departments. And I think if we start to teach the cities how to do that, you know, the solution providers will start to offer that. So right now we're still saying, here's a mobility challenge, here's a mobility solutions, and that's what we use it for. And as long as we do that, we won't be able to scale it properly because of the investment side of it.
Yeah, you're so right. And thinking about a mobility challenge, we need to think about this holistically, right? Which is what you're saying. It's, you know, we don't just move around. We don't use transport for the fun of using transport, although sometimes maybe we do with cycling or something like that. But it's to get places and it's to connect our lives and it's to get to our employment, it's to go to, you know, a meeting or an appointment or to socialize or to, you know, do something. And I think when we start thinking about like that, you think about, well, what do I need from, you know, thinking about me going around? I don't just want to think about my mobility when I'm doing mobility and then my whatever else when I'm doing my whatever else. So thinking about how we can use that data more effectively, more efficiently, but then also from a customer perspective as well. And I think we talk about that horizontal, that can be just within a, you know, government agency, one department, because we know that there's still silos within. But then you start thinking that we've got to get that right first, right? Then you start thinking across, like as we were just talking about, like connecting hospitals with mobility data so we know where people are moving. Is activity going up or down? What is that doing to our hospital system? Whatever the case is. There's different use cases that you come up with.
Yeah, no, I did a project with a company called IBI Group in Aberdeen in Scotland. Aberdeen was the city, and Aberdeenshire, which is around the city, which is the countryside. And we talked to the hospital, and they basically, so we talked about mobility data, and we interviewed the hospital as well. And they said, you know, the public transport, it wasn't great, they said, because people were late for appointments and they missed appointments. And I said, we actually don't know where exactly what route people are taking and how they get here, but we can see some appointments, people come from the same area. Maybe we could arrange, you know, car sharing or something like this. But we just don't know. So there's no information, but the information is there. And I said, it's a bit of a shame because if you're too late, you miss your appointment. It's expensive for the hospital to reschedule. And we all know about waiting lists. I think that's the same in all countries. It's just as a shame that we can fix it, not relatively easy, but it's fixable if we actually just use the information to say, okay, let's have car sharing. And when we come to autonomous vehicles and these things, you know, we need to use it to solve normal problems. And it's just an example. Why would a hospital be interested in mobility data? That's the typical question. So, well, you need to ask everyone. And that's why you need to go across different, even when you say the same department in a city authority, you need to ask your teams, or you need to have a way to be able to say that I have this information now. Is it useful for anyone? If you go into open data portals and you see who are the key users, it's the cities themselves. Which is quite interesting. Who's then always number one is the cities who use their own data.
Yeah, that's so interesting. And like, I've never really thought about it. Although then I think about it when I'm working for cities, I'm the one that goes, oh, what data do we have? You know, open the data portal. But yeah, no, that's so interesting. And even the example there that you used of mobility, like, I really like what you said, that we'll use technology and data to solve normal problems, because I think sometimes we often think about, you know, smart cities, we'll have all these issues if we're flying around and whatever, and this advanced technology. No. Let's solve our normal problems first.
It was interesting. Yesterday, I was talking at a mobility conference here in Copenhagen. Actually, I don't have a driving license even, so I'm not very advanced when it comes to that. But it was interesting. We talked a lot about walking at a mobility conference. You know, there's all of these car manufacturers and all of these at the expo. But the conversations were really about, and it's the first and last mile we talked a lot about, but in general, we need to make walkable cities. And there's this Norwegian professor who looked into, why is it so important to make the first mile attractive to walk? Because if you look at, you know, how do I get from here to the train or the bus or a car sharing scheme or whatever it is. You have to walk from your house to that place. And he said, actually, they have made a lot of evidence that if you make it very attractive to walk there, citizens are willing to walk 70% longer. So instead of taking the car, it's nice to walk because there's something nice to look at. It feels safe and things like that. And he figured that out by measuring the impact where they have done that. So you need to measure things, you know, because you can do things that's great. But if you don't show the impact and you show impact through data, if you don't show that and you can visualize it in great ways, that when it starts to make sense. Because I think there's a lot of great projects out there, but we never have actually measured the impact. We know it's good, but we don't know in what way it's good and how we can then learn from that and scale it. So we said, that was great. We can see there's more people walking or cycling, but we don't understand what it actually did.
Yeah, I was gonna say, it's like, oh yeah, that's good. We know, like you said, but it's all anecdotal. But until you get the data behind it, because you can't use that as evidence then to push the case for the next project. Yeah. Or there's things like, if you think of, you know, it was good because of these reasons, it had these challenges, but actually they're overcome by blah 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 whatever. But then you might have another place that also worked in this place and they did this a little bit differently because of, you know, ABCD. So then you start getting this bank of use cases and case study that will suit your needs in different ways, and you can mix and match kind of situation, which I think is important.
Yeah.
It's important because, you know, that's what we want to do. We want to see more and more of this and then build up that bank so that it becomes, you know, we know that sustainability is important, for example. So we need to know that, you know, measuring data and place-based data and impact is really important as well.
Yeah, and you can see when we talk about climate, which is obviously a big issue. And so if you don't measure, so there's a lot of, actually, for the solution providers going out and saying, if you measure air quality or if you measure other things, but of course you have to do initiatives to improve the air quality. And then if you can measure that, you can actually get carbon offsets. Actually, you can get funding to scale it in quite an easy way. And it's interesting to talk to these solution providers and said, even if we say to them, you hardly have to pay anything because if you already have a good project and you know the impact, we're going to measure it for you. And then we're almost going to write the application for you to get money back so you can scale it. And they still have a problem selling their products and solutions, which I still don't really understand. So there's still something about, this is why I always try not actually to mention the word data, because people get a little bit afraid of that. So I always talk about, what's the insights you need? What is the information that you would like? If you do this project with social services, how would that actually, what insights do you need in order to, you know, provide better services for the citizens? And then they start to say, yeah, actually we know, nice to know if they, how much do they actually use the services that we have? What areas of the city are they using the most? Are they happy? Are they unhappy? And these kind of things. And then you can translate that into different kinds of solutions that has to do with technology and data. But the conversation you have with whoever it is, it doesn't have to be technology and data. That's where the people like myself and you and other ones are able to translate that into smart city, smart community solutions. And I think that's another barrier, that people are too bad talking about this. So they just talk about their technology or talking about some data, a new solution or AI. You don't have to mention these things, because we need to talk like we always have and say, you know, what's your challenge? And they talk about the challenge. And so what have you already tried? What insight would be great for you? And then you actually get extremely useful feedback. If I just ask you, what data do you need for your project? Nobody can answer that.
Yeah. And oh my God, data. No, that's too scary. Ah.
Yeah.
I think it's so important. It goes back to language again, right? And translating again. And I think that's another, you know, when we start talking about like this, you remember again, and then you remember that that's how you design your process when you are trying to work with different people as well. But yeah, it's something that, you know, you just take for granted once you've kind of worked out, but it's really, really key and will be for the future as well. I'm just looking at the time. I'm really keen to talk about the future now, if you're keen. but feel free to mention, sprinkle in any other little project, not little, feel free to sprinkle in any projects you want to as well when we talk about the future, because obviously as we talk about trends and things like that. So keen to talk about any future trends that we aren't talking about enough. And yeah, some of those projects that you're working on to kind of, I guess, solve some of those issues as well.
Yeah, I think I'll just go back to the one I mentioned before, because I think what we, I do other projects now that I won't mention where they are, but we're still talking about open data and data marketplaces. And that's fine, that they have a purpose. But I really think if we want to talk about how effectively to work with data in the future, we need this, what I call data collaboratives, which is more community. So back to the smart community idea. So you need the collaborative. You need to bring the right people together and have a common purpose. And that can be really broad. So again, back to COVID times, we had all of these people coming together, which was absolutely amazing to see the information you can do. And you just need to put another title on it now. So that could be safer communities. And then you can start to have a conversation like we are doing now and say, what is that we actually need? And you get these different players and you don't know who's going to pop up. And that's the same thing that happened with COVID-19. Who actually came in, you know, said, what do you know about this? And what do you have? And that's what happens when you have these comments. So I think the idea about data collaboratives is something that we need to push. And I think it's coming in the future as well. And I know we're already talking about the second thing, which is digital twins. I'm not going to go into the technology, but it comes back to the information you put into that. It's the same with AI. People think it solves everything. But if you don't have the quality information to put into these technologies, it comes out with some really bad and not interesting things. But I think there's something in it, the digital twins, that it visualizes things. So it's easy to understand for everyone. Because I think it's been many of the other solutions that we talked about from a smart city perspective have not been very visual. But the digital twin is easy to have a conversation with the local citizens. You can say, imagine if we did this, this would happen. And then you can comment on that from a citizen perspective. Well, if we talk about somebody else, here's a smart lamppost with facial recognition and stuff like this. How does that do? So I really think it's not totally new, but I think it's new to work with. So we don't see many examples of digital twins still. But I think it's going to have a really positive impact of how we work with this because it's a lot more visual. And I think that's really needed. So I think, and of course, AI is going to have a big impact as well. So I think that's the main things. And yeah, I'm working on different projects with this, but I'm basically still trying to do the same as I did 13 years ago to say, you know, it's just a tool, the technology and the data. So we need the communities. We need to speak about how we actually, what is it we need? And then we need to figure out how can we, there's so many resources out there, so many solutions, but they need to be to fit the purpose. And I think that's what is getting a lot better. And I think that's what the future will bring, because we can't just have off-the-shelf products for this anymore. And the challenges are also getting too complex to solve just with one company or one solution. Mm-hmm. So, I think it wasn't very futuristic. But I just, and the mobility conference, I just think it was great. We talk about walking and cycling more than connected cars, but because that's where we want to go. and we also talked about connected and autonomous vehicles, but it was like a secondary thing. You know, it wasn't the primary focus. The focus was about how do we make these cities more attractive? How do we walk and cycle a lot more than we do? And then, we need the car for something and we need the trains and the buses for something, but let's try to keep that as minimum as possible. So I really think it was an interesting conversation where only a few years ago, it was all about autonomous vehicles and very futuristic. And everybody wanted that. And so why do we need it? I think we need it for purposes, but
I think like going back to designing the city or morphing the city to being about people, not, we don't want to redesign cities for a new vehicle like an autonomous car. We did that when we went from horse and cart to automobile, and we're still dealing with the consequences, right? But we also can't put our heads in the sand. We know this stuff is coming. we know that people, you know, with lots and lots of money and seemingly empty pockets are working on this stuff because they can see the benefit, the profit and the benefit of it. So then we need to have a plan, and we need to have, you know, we need to be ready. So then when this stuff hits our doorstep, we are the ones making the decisions. It's not happening to us. It's happening with us, and we can shape that. But yeah, it is really exciting to have this conversation about walking and cycling at mobility conferences, which just seems, I mean, maybe because I work in the space, it seems obvious, but it wasn't happening, right? And so now is. But also, like, how can we use insights and data to make better decisions about those things as well? Because those projects in particular, to get the benefit, like the cost-benefit ratio or whatever, we know that this is how things work, the economic benefits, et cetera, et cetera. You can show that, but you need to be able to measure and monitor it. And we need to know what things we want to measure and monitor when we go into these projects. And I think measuring interventions is really, really key and quite simple. Yeah. I shouldn't say simple necessarily, but quite, you know, we've got the technology, we've got stuff available to do this in a very minimalistic way. And it's just about weaving that in, embedding that into projects that aren't smart city projects necessarily, in inverted commas, but they're projects about people, right? And we can use those tools that we have available.
Yeah. I think one just quick example.
Yeah, go.
Like from Copenhagen, this is 7-8 years ago. We had one city bike before all the electric scooters coming in. And because everyone is cycling in Copenhagen, you know, I have two bikes, and most citizens, there's more bikes than people here. And that's why it was just that everyone, including myself, thought, you know, the city bikes is for tourists. So you put them at all the stations and close to the hotels and the main sites. And when we had the city data exchange, we looked at the data behind it, because you had to check in. There was like a tablet on them. And so our guess, qualified guess, and other ones was that about 75% will be tourists. And then we looked at the data, and it was 75% locals using them. So that, again, it's just a simple example of, we plan out from what we think, and then we make mistakes. And it was very easy to get the data, because they were actually, everyone could use the data. You could just take it from the web page. So they opened it up. And it's just an example of when we do planning for mobility, but all kinds of things, social services, other things as well, climate. We assume a lot of things. And of course, we shouldn't get data about everything, but we should just have a look at, are we sure that this is the way things are? And then, as you say, rightly said before, then measure the impact when we actually try to do something. I think that's a great starting point of how to use data without being very futuristic and these things.
Mm-hmm. Well, so Peter, it's been so great to chat with you. I really enjoyed that. I think we could talk for a lot longer, as kind of every time we have a conversation, I feel like that. But we've got to wrap it up there. Yeah. One last question. How can people connect with you?
I think the best thing is always LinkedIn to find me in there. And then that's what I answer all the time. You can always email me and find me on my webpage and stuff like this. But LinkedIn is the best way to do that. Or find me in Barcelona.
Yes. Meet everyone. Smart City Bandit catch up.
Exactly.
Whatever we're called. Whatever. We'll be in Barcelona on the, 15th? 16th?
To the 17th,
To the 17th of November. Which means we'll have to release this episode before then. But
that'll be Peter,
good. Yes, let's do that. Peter, it's been so great to chat again. And I look forward to our next conversation. We will put all the links in the show notes so people can click away and find you. You're doing amazing work, and I always love following along. So, thanks for doing what you do. And we'll hang out in Barcelona, and people can find you on LinkedIn and hit you up there.
Yeah, always a pleasure. And I'll hopefully see you soon.
Yeah, we'll talk soon. Thanks, Peter.
Yeah.
Talk soon. Bye.
All the best. Bye-bye.
Are you looking for an engaging speaker, MC, or facilitator for your next big event? Then we've got you covered. Zoe is a go-to speaker, MC, and conversation facilitator with a difference. She's a master at simplifying the complex and making connections you might never see. Book Zoe for your next event. Email hello@mysmart.community or head over to her speaker page, www.mysmart.community/speaking.
Thanks so much for listening to the Smart Community Podcast. Show notes for this episode and all other episodes are available on our website, mysmart.community/podcast. If you have any questions for us or any of our guests, you can email hello@mysmart.community. You can also find us on the socials. We are on LinkedIn and Twitter @smartcomhq. That's com with two M's. If you are enjoying the podcast, please hit subscribe so you never miss an episode. And we would love for you to leave us a rating and review at wherever you listen. This really helps us reach more ears and eyes, so thank you for your support. As always, we hope you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as we enjoyed making it.
The Smart Community Podcast is what you're looking for.